looking to get caught side of Font. Lepondre away from Davis. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello and welcome to another Elm Park Royal preview podcast. After the departure of Matt Joy, we're now joined by the magnificent Jonathan Lowe. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Good, thank you very much. That's a great build-up. I hope to meet your expectations over the next 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, I mean, there was only one man after MJ sadly left us to go into teaching. I mean, who would want to do that? How are you? How have you been finding the season so far?
I think like everyone really, it was all pretty dim and gloomy after the first 5-6 matches or so, and then they obviously turned the corner. Things are looking very bright, and results and performances have picked up. I think there's still probably a long way to go. Obviously, we know that a lot of players are out through injury, generally things are looking up, and unfortunately, you're going to get results like the one against Blackpool. That was obviously due to a variety of reasons, it's far from a disastrous display, and it's far from disastrous in terms of the league position as well. They're still very close to the playoffs, for what it's worth at this time of the season. So, it's been a bit of an up and down few months, as it always is. Following Reading, I think.
Yeah, a bit disappointing not to move into the playoff places, but obviously with the upcoming points deduction, getting anywhere near there would be a bit of a surprise. As you said, they played pretty well in the first half, I thought. No issues. Well, some issues maybe that were papered over a little bit by Blackpool not being able to finish on the counter, but on the whole, it was a really encouraging first 45.
Yes, I totally agree. I think even though I think especially down the flanks, I think Andy Yeardom and Barbara Rahman will be having a good look at their performance, certainly in the first 45 minutes. And were it not for some sort of woeful finishing from Blackpool, it could have feasibly have been to all at the break. But fair play to Reading, they take the chances. A nice opening goal, a nice free kick. Nice to see them score from a free kick. Nice to see the central defenders get on the score sheet. And the second goal was good work from George Puskas and a nice finish from Deli Bashiru. So at that point, you thought 20 minutes in, it would be a pretty straightforward evening for Reading. But unfortunately, they just let it all slip in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, even with those two goals, it is amazing that Reading's clinicality, is that a word? I'm not sure. But it was the same thing at the beginning of last season. And it seems to now be coming back after a bit of a dodgy period at the back end of last year and the start of this season. Do you think that, while obviously it's a positive to score with most shots, is it a really sustainable way of playing?
Probably not, no, because you're always going to have off days and players are not always going to be performing at their peak week in, week out. When you've got such a stretched squad such as Reading's, they've got a very limited pool of players to rely on. And say over the last sort of month or so, I wouldn't say necessarily everyone's played at their potential and is sort of giving 10 out of 10 performances every week, but they are have been certainly doing enough, sort of 7-8 out of 10 every week. And of course, you've got George Puskas, who hasn't scored any goal so far this season. You've got a team in the top 10 of the division, so they must be doing something right. So, no, I don't think it's sustainable. And I think, performances like last night would have been coming, and just a result of, the lack of numbers, the injuries, bit about the tactics as well, and you're just not going to get a high level a lot of string of positive results playing with such a small squad with sort of limited capabilities.
The other thing about last night is it almost felt like Reading in a microcosm. So as we say, they took their first two chances, played very well first 45, got a bit lucky here and there, and then in the second 45, I think we've seen this display quite a few times where Reading sort of decide to sit back a little bit more and try and shut the game down. And at 2-0, that's a perfectly understandable thing to do. But it felt like the pressure just built and built. And I don't want to say it was inevitable, because Reading have ridden out those games like at Fulham and whatnot before, but Blackpool just found another level that maybe like a team like Fulham, even though they have it, they didn't manage to against us.
Yeah, I think the key word there is a team, really. They all work together. They all, stuck to their game plan, and they knew that the game was probably there for the taking, and it was, and they took it, and fair play to them. I think Reading, again, we've seen it over the years. We've seen it over the past few seasons. Whether they can put in performance after performance, 90-minute performances, they're just unable to do. We've seen flashes of their brilliance in games, whether it's for an hour, whether it's for 45 minutes. And when they do play that like that, then they're one of the best sides in the division. And some of the stats back that up. But unfortunately, they tend to struggle to produce 90-minute performances week after week. Or at least performances enough to grind out wins, which, you look at the game going into last night, you would have thought at home to Blackpool. I know I'm probably falling into the cliche, but, it's a game that they should be getting at least one point out of, I think, to be perfectly honest, especially given the run and Blackpool's start of the season. It was solid, if not unspectacular. And we're left with reeling after a 3-2 defeat and a really sloppy second half performance. So, unfortunately, I think, a variety of reasons for the performance last night, but it's one that they've really got to pick themselves up from and show that they can react in a positive fashion on the weekend.
Yeah, and Paulo after the game was saying... Oh, I've forgotten everything he was saying. What was Paulo saying after the game? Was he saying anything particularly interesting?
Well, he said, he said it was a failure from his team in the second half. And he said that it was, he didn't take responsibility. I mean, he took responsibility in terms of, it was everyone, and it was everyone's, collectively, it was their responsibility, including himself, for the performance. And, he said that there is enough quality in the side to bounce back and perform strongly over the next few games or so. And he also praised Blackpool. He said that what a good team they were, a really good collective outfit. And again, I think, arguably probably deserved 3 points. So, to be fair, he put his hands up. It's not the first time that Reading have let slip a lead. I think QPR game, I think there were 3-1 up, if I'm not mistaken, conceded two late goals to make it 3-3. So unfortunately, it's history kind of repeated itself a bit. But hopefully they can learn from it and, get some players back in the next few weeks and show that it's a one-off. We all know the qualities there. So it's just sort of doing the hard work, I guess, doing the nitty-gritty which you need to do in the Championship week in, week out to ensure that you're sort of fighting in the right half of the table.
Well, yeah, let's just hope that Luke Southwood shows a bit more restraint to those inanimate objects than Raphael did, because otherwise we might be in a bit more trouble. I thought he played really well last night, to be fair. It's such a strange thing when you have a game like that, and it is sorry if you can hear my dog in the background, he is unbelievably loud. Right. But yeah, very stereotypical game of two halves, where in the first half I saw so many positive takes, like Liam Moore was doing really well. Liam Moore, Luke Southwood obviously made that brilliant double save. Even like George Puskas got, worked really hard for the goal. Yeah. And it just kind of completely flipped on its head. And like, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that Reading did play well in that first 45, even if they kind of capitulated in the second. George Puskas is a really interesting case, actually. I know everyone talks about him all the time, and I am sorry. But every week it feels like it's like people go into the game expecting it to be his last chance. And he did miss that chance at 2-0 to really put the game to bed. Are we still expecting him to start? Like, a lot of people weren't expecting him to even start this game.
I think so, yeah. I think just because he is an out and out striker. I think Panovic is just going to persevere with him. Clearly, if he's going to be on the bench, he's not going to score goals and he's not going to get his confidence up. So I think obviously with Yakimete and Lucas Schau being out long term, he is the only option. Just because he hasn't scored goals, there's obviously everyone's got their thinking whether he should or shouldn't start. I've unfortunately kind of given up on him. I just don't think he's going to be good enough for Reading and he's not going to score the goals. However, would I play Jamari Clark or Femi Azeez or anyone else ahead of him up front? I don't really know, to be honest. So I don't really know what the answer is. He just needs something to go in off his backside, off the back of his head, whatever. And hopefully that would give him a bit of confidence. I think certainly in the first half last night, he put in a shift. He obviously pressed well for that first goal, forced the defender into a mistake and helped us, set up the second goal. And he looked quite lively, but in terms of, you know, holding the ball up, linking up play, his finishing just wasn't there. And obviously it summed up in the second half. And unfortunately, as a lot of players do that, when they get through on goal, they just slam it straight into the keeper. And it's one of my pet hates from footballers. Just anything aside of the keeper, chip him, something, just not straight at the keeper, because the keeper's right there and he's very rarely going to open his legs up. So, that was hugely frustrating. And obviously, he's bought off again on the hour mark, just as he seems to be seemingly every game, which clearly, I don't think, that's probably not going to do his confidence any good either. And Jamari Clark didn't get much of an opportunity. For me, Azeez looked to, made a few bright runs, but by then I think the game was done. So in terms of Saturday, I probably expect George Puskas to start, and we all just have to cross our fingers that somehow he might get a bit lucky in front of goal and break his goal scoring duck.
Yeah, I mean, as I kind of alluded to earlier, to put everything on George Puskas, I think, is a bit harsh, because obviously the chance that he had, the one-on-one, was really the one chance he had all game. And I don't really remember him having many clear-cut chances this season, to be honest. And you have to, it feels like he might, to get the best out of him, you need to play the ball to his runs, which we're not doing, and all of that kind of stuff. But let's not rehash old arguments, because we'll be here all day. I am in agreement. You kind of need him to score at some point. It does need to happen. And fingers crossed on Saturday, we'll finally see that. Are we expecting any of the kind of injured players to be back in contention? I'd name them, but there's so many that,
obviously Tom Holmes came back into the fold last night. So that was good to see him back, another option in the defence. But I don't think that there'll be any of the players back, to be honest. I think next one back, I think, is possibly Tom McIntyre. But I think he had like a triple break in his foot, I think. I think he had that. So, that would obviously take a while to recover from. So, not expecting any of the injured players back any time soon, or certainly not for Saturday. But then again, Panovic might spring a surprise and bring someone back like he did Tom Holmes last night. So, no, I don't want to get people's hopes up.
And I guess, like, we're going to a Blackburn team who have their own kind of Jekyll and Hyde performances. So they've not won in four games now. They obviously have the magnificent Ben Brereton Diaz, who, just love everything about him, to be yeah, perfectly honest. Like, the way that he's completely changed player after playing for Chile is quite a thing to behold. And I think I said this in the season preview podcast, but if you haven't seen his Pepsi advert, go watch his Pepsi advert. It is amazing. They lost 1-0 to QPR last night with their own late goal. It's a winnable game, or at least a game that Reading should feel like they could take something out of, right?
I think so, yeah. Obviously, they're a brilliant performance there last season. 4-2 win. That was arguably the best performance of the season. So if they can rekindle some of that, then they should come away with all three points. Like you said, I think Blackburn tend to be very hot and cold. When they are on form, they're very They're a very tough nut to crack, but at the same time, they're very capable of just putting it in a very average performance. So I think, as ever, it's down to Reading keeping things tight at the back, doing the basics well, and probably hitting Blackburn on the counter attack. And you know, if players like John Swift and Ovi Ejaria can reach their potential, then there's no reason why Reading can't get at least a point up there. So we'll have probably the issues of fatigue like last night. There might be an element of that. Let's say, just as we mentioned before about the stretched squad, not too many options to come off the bench. Obviously Femi Azeez is probably the most likely player to come into the side if he does make any changes. I'd say probably for Ovi Ejaria, because I don't think Ejaria has done too well. We didn't do too well last night, obviously. And apart from that Fulham game, he hasn't really done too well this season. So maybe he needs a bit of time out of the firing line. Azeez obviously showed his potential at the start of the season with the two goals in the first three games. So Reading have certainly got the players to hurt Birmingham. It's just whether they can, I say, do the basics right and keep things tight at the back and really make most of their creativity going forward.
And not to put you on the spot, but do you have a score prediction for Saturday? I mean, I sit on the fence a lot of the time with these. So if you don't, it's okay.
I don't right now, but I can certainly think of one. And to be honest, I'm probably going to sit on the fence and say 1-1. I think it'll be a pretty tight, typical Championship game. And I don't think either side will probably sure enough to get 3 points. So set firmly on the fence there.
Yeah, I mean, I think 1-1's not a bad result. I'm going to be positive. I'm going to say Reading are going to edge it 1-0, I think. I could even see a 2-0 win. Oh, yeah, let's go 2-0. Let's say, I think we'll definitely be focusing. Well, I mean, not that there's much time to focus when you play midweek and Saturday, but I imagine Velko will be looking to make that defence a bit more solid. So let's say a clean sheet. It'll be Everything will be fine, right, John? Everything.
Of course, yeah. But keep the faith, back the boys.
And make some noise. Noise. Yeah, yeah.
So, as we've seen, Reading are really capable of putting off some good performances, good results. So, who would say that they're going to beat Fulham, win Fulham on the top of the league. So, I think it's a good chance now. It means they don't have too much time to reflect on last night's result. They can go up to Blackburn, try and start afresh and hopefully get on the front foot. And who knows, even George Puskas might score.
I'll tell you a little secret. I've had George Puskas score first in the last two games, and I was so confident, and I'm not sure I'll be putting that bet on again on Saturday, but I'm sure he'll get one. It'll be fine. Thank you very much for joining us, Jonathan. Hopefully we'll be having you back a bit more regularly now. After the break, we talk to Rovers Chat about Blackburn. I'm here with Ryan from the Rovers Chat podcast. How are you doing, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Not bad at all. How about you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks. How's Blackburn's season been so far?
Yeah, as with all things Rovers, very up and down. So a surprising start to the season, to find ourselves in the top six after, six or seven games was, a nice surprise, because most people were expecting a very transitionary season, with losing Adam Armstrong and Harvey Elliott going back on loan to Liverpool. So no one expected to be up there. So we were kind of just enjoying the ride when we could. And obviously the man Brereton Diaz was banging in the goals and making headlines in Chile. So it was all a bit fun. And then we got a couple of injuries, key injuries to Daryl Enahan and Ryan Nyambi before the Huddersfield game. And the last four games, we've not won. And it's really just exposed some old wounds in the fan base, shall we say, about the manager and just how everyone's feeling. And we obviously lost on Tuesday night to QPR, and everyone's kind of feeling in the doldrums again now. So, a bit up and down.
Yeah, I mean, it's always the way, isn't it? Like, as long as results are going one way, it almost doesn't matter what how well the team's playing in many respects. I know that in our pre-season kind of chat that a few of us had, we were talking about Tony Mowbray and that Blackburn fans kind of, you know, there wasn't a lot of love for him, I guess, is a nice way of putting it. How are fans feeling now? I mean, you've touched on it. It's still kind of not a great relationship.
Yeah. I mean, towards the end of last season, particularly with the horrendous run that we went on in the new year, you know, it's something like 4 wins in 20 games or something. You know, the majority of the fan base had made their mind up. And everyone was kind of thinking, if there's change is going to happen, you know, it needs to happen in pre-season, so you give the new man a chance. That obviously didn't happen. Mowbray's contract is up at the end of this season, so you kind of just accept the fact that he's probably going to go at the end of the season, although some people are kind of convinced that he will get a new contract, given that he is good pals with the CEO. So, yeah, the fan base have sadly kind of, well, they'd already turned against him, but the last 4 results have kind of reignited that fire a little bit. And it's just, you know, it's things like the in-game management, some of the selections, some of the comments. It's just really grating on the fans now. And the thing that we need, I think, is just closure on the situation. So is he staying or is he going? Because it's not helping anyone out. And, you know, to have a fairly decent start like we've had and have a real nice story in Brereton Diaz and still feel this way, you know, we just need to know either way, I think, what's happening. And there's lots of people just thinking he should go now. And obviously we get the new man in. And it's a real shame to say that, because he did rescue the club, you know, when we got relegated into League One. There was a real reconnection with the fan base and a real connection with the players again, and he's got a really good young squad that clearly love the club and fight for the team and all of that stuff. And it's a real shame to be talking about the manager in this way, but you know, he's taken us as far as he can is kind of the summary of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird hearing you talk about him. I actually see a lot of parallels between him and our manager, Veljko Paunović, with selections and in-game management. But I think, you know, as I said, like, wins cover up all manner of sins. And at the minute, we're on a little bit of a bounce, admittedly. Not after Blackpool. People are questioning things again a little bit. But, yeah, so you mentioned that you've got a young squad. And it is a really young squad in some respects. I mean, you've got like Therese Dolan, who's 19. You've got, you know, a couple of 22-year-olds, or you know, 3 or 4 22-year-olds, 24-year-old in Lewis Travis, picking up a lot of minutes. Do you think that despite that young age, that this team where do you see this team, like, in terms of a championship side? Are they good enough to be challenging the top six, or are they not at that stage yet?
Not quite top six level yet, but, you know, we should be comfortably mid-table. And with some of the attacking options that we've got, you know, we should be doing things like when you're 2-0 up at home to Luton and 2-0 up at home to Coventry, you know, we should be seeing those games out. That's what we should be doing. It is a squad that will kind of get better. You know, Tyrese Dolan, as you say, is a real success story from nowhere. Signed him on a free from Preston's under 23 squad, and he's absolutely taken his opportunities. John Buckley this season has really emerged into an important player in the midfield. The real sour point for Rovers is we've got a lot of players by the end of next season, and then some of them this season, that are out of contract. So Joe Rothwell can start talking to clubs now. Ryan Nyambi can leave at the end of the season. Darragh Lenihan, I mean, this one makes me really sad. You know, club captain, we are at real risk of losing him if we don't offer a good contract or he signs one. You know, these are players that are coming through our academy. You know, and then Thomas Kaminski, the goalkeeper, there's some real red beacons going off in the squad at the moment. And for what Mowbray's built up, and for a real... You see them kind of in the off-pitch stuff, the social media stuff, what they do on Instagram, all of that. You can see it is a close-knit squad and a tight-knit squad, and it would be great to just see them get older together and kind of, if we're smart with loan signings and things like that, just see where they can go. But yeah, there is a fear that it's just going to start unraveling a bit. But do you know what? Who knows? 2-3 seasons time, you know, if the squad is still intact and John Buckley's got 3 seasons under his belt and Dolan's got 3 seasons under his belt, Brereton's, you know, somehow stayed at us, maybe we can start thinking about top six.
Yeah, I mean, Darragh Lenihan, I think like a couple of years ago, his sort of personal goal difference when he was on the pitch was like among the best in the division. And when he wasn't playing for you, it wasn't going so well. He is one of the older heads in your squad at 27, which is sort of a crazy thing to say in and of itself. I guess we should probably touch on Ben Brereton-Diaz. 10 goals so far this season. It actually blows my mind that he is one of the players who's still 22, because with that beard and that face, I always think he's like pushing 35 or something. But he must be, I don't know, he's not an English player anymore, so maybe you've lost a bit of money there. But he is, you know, come on so much in the last kind of 12 months.
It's a ridiculous story, really, because he was under a bit of pressure when we signed him from Nottingham Forest, because, you know, we'd been under transfer embargo and hadn't spent significant money since Jordan Rhodes back in 2012. And this signing just came out of nowhere for $7 million for a largely unknown 19-year-old from Nottingham Forest. And, you know, it's fair to say his first couple of seasons didn't really tear up any trees for us, and significant pressure from the fan base, you know, that price tag weighed heavy. And, you know, some people were grossly unfair against him, you know, what they were calling him, you know, like a donkey striker and things like that. But he really hadn't delivered the goods. The thing where it all seemed to change was after the pandemic. And I don't know if it's because the fans weren't there or he'd kind of worked on his body or whatever during the break from football. Something just seemed to click, and he had a real good end to that pandemic season, that kind of curtailed season. Then he started last season really well. And was just affecting our games more, and got an injury last season, which kind of just meant he tailed off. And then really this whole Chile thing has just absolutely just exploded his confidence. You know, it's clearly had a positive impact on him to have the Chilean fan base obviously singing his name as much as we are. And, you know, what Chile do, Rovers fans do, we're all bouncing off each other now. We're all chanting Diaz's name, and he's just gone game to game and seems to score and seems to love it and thrive on it. And, you know, to say Bradley Dack, a massive character like Bradley Dack, is missing from the pitch at the moment, on and off the pitch, Bradley Dack, Brereton's just really stepped into that mantle at the moment and appears to be loving it. So, yeah, just such a shock, a real surprise. You know, if you'd said this to someone 12 months ago that he'd score at the Copa America and be championship top goal scorer at one point, would have been like, hell no. But, you know, the thing on price, actually, we're hoping, well, not hoping, of course, but if he did need to be sold, or it was inevitable he was going to be sold, La Liga and the Spanish market is kind of what we're thinking, with the whole Chile connection and things like that. That might be where clubs are willing to pay. Or a smart English club would probably just absolutely market that Chilean connection, because he's a god out there. I cannot describe it. Just have a look at the Rovers Twitter and Instagram and everything. They love him. He's an A-list celeb in Chile now. It's bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of my favourite stories of the year, and most people's, I think. I've been plugging his Pepsi advert on almost every episode just because it is so
Why not?
Good. So good. Let's talk about like your style of play, I guess. You've switched to a back five in the last couple of games, whereas you were playing 4-2-3-1, or at least according to FB Ref. Who knows whether this is right or not? why was that, and what difference does it make?
Yeah, so first thing to say is last season we were playing more of a possession-based game, and you know, certainly second half of the season, it wasn't getting the results. So we started this season 4-3-3, actually, rather than the 4-2-3-1. And you could see the first couple of games, Mowbray had clearly thought, actually, we need to change the style of play. So it's less possession, a bit more grit, you know, with the likes of Daniel Ayala fit and in that squad, kind of led by Ayala and Lenihan from the back, a bit of championship fight. We did have a largely settled team in those first few games, which I think was contributing into the results. You know, as a midfield three of Rothwell, Travis Buckley, a front three of Dolan, Brereton and Gallagher, and then the back four of Pickering, Ayala, Lenihan and Nyambi, with Kaminski as the goalkeeper. The team was picking itself in many respects. So as I say, less possession, a bit more grit, not too many shots, not too many chances being created, but a different side to Rovers that you'd seen from the previous season. It was a willingness to kind of do the ugly stuff, get stuck in a bit, hang on a little bit, as you sometimes need to do in the Championship. Then, as I say, we got the couple of injuries before the Huddersfield and Blackpool games. And that was that. after this international break. The last two, he's gone to wing backs because this is the main criticism of Tony Mowbray. He respects opposition way too much. Just, he does not worry about how we can impact other sides and how we can hurt them. He's always thinking about what we need to do to cancel it out. So Coventry play wing backs, so he matched up with the wing backs, and there was an injury as well, which meant he brought in Van Hecker for his first start of the season. So we matched up Coventry, and then he matched up QPR as well. And it's just 4-3-3 is the formation that we should be playing, because we are most dangerous when we're doing the wide strikers. Gallagher and Brereton in a wide striker role in a 4-3-3 is just much better than what he's done the last couple of games. Even though we're playing wing backs, he's still deploying them as wide strikers. So then you're thinking, well, the whole purpose of wing backs is to hurt the opposition from wing back down the wide. So it just kind of became a bit of a pointless exercise. And, you know, we've lost the body from midfield by doing wing backs and wide strikers. So a bit of an odd one. I do prefer the 4-3-3. I think it suits the players better. And I think we can hurt teams much more in the 4-3-3. But who knows what we'll see on Saturday. If Reading don't play wing backs, we'll probably be 4-3-3.
Yeah, I mean, we play, well, usually a flat back four. The parallels between our two teams are astounding. I mean, Reading are as well a team that kind of need to take chances. They hold on. And our manager, he sets up to try and beat the opposition rather than to maximise his own team sometimes. So, which should lead, I think, to a boring 0-0. And yet, games between us have been pretty high scoring, like the last few times. What are you expecting this time out?
This is a pretty important result, or important game for Rovers, actually, because we've got Derby away afterwards that we don't have the best record at Pride Park. And then we've got a pretty tough November, actually. We've got Fulham, we've got Sheffield United, and we've got another tough game as well, which I can't remember. So November looks difficult. So this Reading game, and particularly off the back of the four results that we've just had, where the tide is just turning a little bit and, you know, the start to the season's being eroded, you know, I think this is a game that both the players and the manager are going to be eyeballing to say, look, we need to stop the rot a little bit here. So I am expecting us to be a bit more on the front foot. Mowbray got heavy criticism on Tuesday night because he set up to cancel QPR rather than try and be on the front foot. I think the fans are going to demand that we're on the front foot on Saturday. If Reading do get an early goal, I can see it getting a bit toxic, which is not good. But yeah, I think it's going to be a performance where Rovers will try and go for Reading a little bit in view of the need for a result.
Well, that in some ways does suit us, because I think we like to be not necessarily playing on the counter. Like, we're not very good at the counter because we don't have any fast wingers or anything. But yeah, at least not. I don't really know the way that Reading play, to be perfectly honest. We just turn up and occasionally do something magnificent and then sit back for the next 45 minutes, which works some of the time and doesn't work other, as we saw on Wednesday night. So do you have a score prediction as my final question?
I do. I do fancy us to get the win. I do. It's just got the air of an important one for us. And yeah, I just think we are. I think the players are going to respond to that. The players aren't silly and they are active on social media. And I think they've seen the fallout from Tuesday night. And on Tuesday, he rested players like John Buckley. You know, he didn't get any minutes. Gallagher came on for a few minutes at the end. Rothwell was a halftime substitution. So I think there's going to be Dolan didn't play any minutes either. So I think there's going to be some fresh players available, players that have had good starts to the season as well. So I am fancying us to get a 2-1 win. I'm not saying it's going to be, you know, a domination from Rovers. It might be cagey at times. It might be nervy. Particularly if Reading go 1-0 up, that will make the atmosphere very kind of either toxic or just flat and tame. But yeah, 2-1, I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think I've gone for a... Well, I think in the end I was positive and went for a 2-0 Reading win. So I'm not sure that I'm that positive hearing that you have fresh legs, because that's the one thing that Reading definitely don't have with like a paper-thin squad. But
well, we have got an injury. Harry Pickering's probably going to miss the game, and Lewis Travis went off as well. So they could be two key players missing there.
Well, I don't like to sound happy about injuries, but that is probably good news for us. get well soon to those two. Well, Ryan, thanks very much for coming and talking to us. Good luck for the season, but maybe not for Saturday.
Thank you, Matt. And yeah, good luck to you as well.